about her colleagues.
So you're saying if Texas Tornado and I are about to fight together, I can't tell him he looks good?
That is correct, Andrea replied. No unsolicited comments. Ninja Astronaut cogitated on this for a moment before asking in her Texas twang,
So, he has to solicit me telling him he looks good.
Hey, Ninja Astronaut, called out Texas Tornado,
who was just a guitar away from singing about heartache in his blue jeans, cowboy boots, denim shirt, and beat-up old Stetson hat.
How do I look today?
You look hot, Texas Tornado.
Ninja Astronaut turned back to Andrea. Texas Tornado stuck his behind in Ninja Astronaut's direction and gave a wiggle.
How about now, Ninja Astronaut?
Even hotter?
Ninja Astronaut turned back to Andrea and asked, So that was okay, right? In general. Andrea started as she looked over at Ms. O, who was absorbed with some business on her tablet, or just pretending she was so she could ignore this train wreck. It is best to view your coworkers as just that and not concern yourself with their attractiveness. The big axe stifled laughter, and she shot him a death stare.
What about Lord and Lady Alligator?
Asked a seemingly disembodied voice. After a few moments of staring, Andrea could make out the blur of black chameleon, now blending in with the beige wall behind him. The camouflage faded, allowing Andrea to see him. She had only recently discovered that Black Chameleon was not actually a human chameleon mix, but a muter named Curtis who could change colors and wore a lycra bodysuit that adapted with his skin tone.
They met at work, and no one gives them any grief. You can just leave us out of this, responded Lord Alligator in his Cajun accent.
What about Eyes of Horus?
Asked Scarlet Revenge, a 20-something young woman who wore a dress with a giant red A on the front.
He can see through everyone's clothes with his supervision.
Yes,
shouted Eyes of Horus from his falcon head, a top muscular male body clad in a tunic.
I can see through clothes. I can also see through walls, terrorist walls, villainous evil walls. So maybe it's not so bad.
I see how you look at me.
Scarlet Revenge shot back.
You wish, said Eyes of Horus.
This is getting slightly off track, Andrea remarked, mostly to herself. Crying Niobe, dressed down in sweats instead of her ancient Greek chiton, waved her arms wildly.
Everyone, stop! You're making me upset and...
She held her hand over her eyes.
No, no, no. Someone calm Crying Niobe down, Andrea instructed. She could flood this entire building and we'd lose our deposit.
Rhino Woman, an actual rhino, in a sleek pantsuit with an M16 strapped to her back, stood up on her hind legs and spoke in a soft voice, like a mother tucking her child in for sleep.
Excuse me. I would like to say something, she said.
The room paused to pay due attention to a rhino with a rifle, and she continued,
I was born just a normal rhinoceros, a simple but noble creature whose only instinct was to survive and protect my rhino family. As I aged, I had my own calves and discovered the instinct to protect them. Then I was captured by an evil scientist, Sierra Psycho, who gave me intelligence beyond any normal human, much less a rhino. I was modified to be a perfect killer. I was made to walk upright, and I was given these human-like hands.
Rhino Woman held out her tough gray hands for all to see.
My prayers were answered when Cup sent in Ecomaniac to save me. Now I fight for good, but my increased intelligence and the other chemical changes in my brain have awakened incredibly intense sexual urges inside me.
This is not appropriate, Andrea said.
So, as a rhino woman, discovering her body and herself, I feel as though I deserve a little extra leeway to explore myself.
You can explore yourself however you want when your shift ends, Andrea answered.
Sometimes I ache to be touched, and if no one else will do it, then Rhino Woman will have to...
No! Andrea cut her off. You cannot touch yourself while you're working.
Well, I have, countered Rhino Woman.
Well, stop.
I never asked for this life. I never asked to be Rhino Woman.
The big axe slammed the butt of his axe on the ground, stood, and declared,
I am the big axe! I am sick of hearing us bicker before we fight together. Let her finish so we can move on to more important matters.
Andrea felt a little annoyed that he felt she was a damsel that needed rescuing, but also relieved that Rhino Woman sat down and stopped discussing pleasuring herself. She rapidly read aloud the rest of Kermit's notes, ignoring the occasional snickers and jeers coming from the crowd.
Yada, yada, yada. Err on the side of caution and of training, Andrea said, already walking away from the podium. With that, Ms. O stood up and announced, Congratulations, you have all now completed the minimum time requirements for sexual harassment training. I hope everyone found it informative. As I mentioned, it's possible that not all of you will survive the day, so I've brought in our life insurance reps to discuss your coverage. We've also got some universal translators for all of you. It's just two little stickers. One goes in your ear, and the other goes on the inside of your mouth. Sounds gross, but they're tiny, and you won't even notice. Before that, however, Rabbi Diamond is going to brief you on the information that was taken from Chronicles of the Fall of Our Planet, a book his mother sent him by Crystal with what we hope will be useful information on the Sparnaxians. You'll find the info in your packets. Teresa DeMarco will be explaining a few small things to keep in mind, the most important of which is, do not let whatever we end up fighting today get outside of our territory. If Mega Defense fights our bad guys in Westchester or Superbia in Staten Island, they get a big chunk of our money. Also, they will likely blow it and our planet will be destroyed. Lunch will be wraps. I got y'all cookies, too, because I love my soups.
Andrea sat up front with Ms. O on the lead bus headed toward Yankee Stadium. As it accelerated and merged onto the Grand Central Parkway, she had never felt more like a parent chaperone on a field trip for rambunctious middle schoolers who could destroy the bus with their bare hands or talons.
Where are we celebrating tonight?
Asked Bison Soldier, whom Andrea would describe as the bison analog of King Tiger, more bison than human. He had human hands and worked on his hind legs, but otherwise he was very bisonic, bisonish, bisonian.
And don't tell me we're getting pizza, because what you got here in New York ain't pizza.
Go back to Chicago, yelled Senora Fuego.
I would love to. Hopefully there'll be a Chicago tomorrow.
Different songs played out of various music devices. Mecca Beowulf pumped a hip-hop beat out of his chest.
Where's the best pizza in this town? He asked over the music.
Defara, said the big axe.
Rizzo's, said King Tiger.
Crosby Pizza Stop, said Senora Fuego.
Don't care, said Lightning Wong.
Cerro Otto Nove, said Cosmina.
Well, actually, taste is subjective, but Roberta's, said Inspector Well Actually.
Senora Fuego's Yankees hat lifted off her head
and floated toward the back of the bus.
Don't make me come back there, mind mover. I will move you right out this bus.
The hat floated back onto her head.
That's right, she said. Respect. Yankees suck.
The Shamrock called out and was immediately echoed by Crispus' attacks, both in their grating Boston accents.
Wait, are we actually supposed to save Yankee Stadium?
Asked Crispus' attacks.
Can't we just let this thing rip down that piece of junk and see if it gets tired after that? Too bad for you it can't rip down all the championships,
said Senora Fuego to a chorus of cheers, followed by celebratory high fives.
Listen, I'm going to stop this thing, said the Shamrock, but I might let him rip up Jeter's plaque first.
Andrea looked outside to see onlookers standing on the service road for the Grand Central, cheering for the buses as they passed. Some held signs of support with messages such as, "We believe in you." Others went for wit and held signs such as the one that read, "I owe money, so don't worry about it." The superheroes also heard the noise and looked out to see the rambunctious crowds cheering for them.
"You know, this reminds me of the time I ran the New York City Marathon," King Tiger said.
Crispus' attacks groaned loudly.
"Again? Every time I'm down here, he's talking about running a marathon. You're a mutated tiger human with unbreakable bones. You could win the marathon running backward and then eat all the runners up as they finish. No one on this freaking bus is impressed by your marathon. Whatever is in that egg is the only living creature on this planet that has not heard about your marathon," the Shamrock added.
Cosmina and Senora Fuego, as if psychically connected, started a chant of "Boston sucks!" in perfect unison. All of the New York crew joined in, even Lightning Wong. Andrea whispered along into her hand. When Ms. O noticed, she winked.
"We come all the way down here, and this is what we get," said Crispus attacks. "We love you," yelled Cosmina. "You are going to help us save the best city in the whole world."
"Crispus, a beautiful Hungarian woman just told me she loved me," said the Shamrock.
"Romanian,"
Cosmina said with piercing eyes that she normally reserved for people like Andrea, who wore her robot suit.
"Romanian sounds great. See you at Sammy's at 7.
It's a joke. Like you said, you wanted to go get Romanian food. Sammy's is a Romanian restaurant in the..." God, that did not land.
"I really hope your voice is not the last thing I hear,"
the big axe shouted back. A mass of humanity greeted them when they pulled off the Major Deegan Expressway onto Jerome Avenue in the Bronx. Television crews from across the country and the world had to compete with the uncredentialed for position. The police escort kept everyone relatively at bay until King Tiger took the first step off the bus and the wall of people surged forward. Senora Fuego came down next and waved to her adoring fans. King Tiger was the leader of the team and was loved by New Yorkers, but Senora Fuego was the most popular. Cosmina had disappeared into kitchen sink in the back of the bus and now emerged in full suit. The second and third buses pulled in behind as Rabbi Diamond bounced down the steps. Reporters asked various forms of the questions, "How is it going to go in there?" as Lightning Wong and Permafrost emerged into the open air. The big axe was the last of the locals to exit, but before he did, he turned to Ms. O and said,
"KT's about to do the roar. Fuig's got too much applause. There's no way he doesn't roar."
Almost on cue, King Tiger held a forepaw to the air, dipped his head, and quickly raised it back up, releasing an earth-shaking tiger roar. All of the crowd noise died. It was still silent as the big axe leaned his axe out the door and started to step out.
"Hey," said Andrea, not realizing that she had started talking.
"Hey," said the big axe.
"Knock 'em dead. Literally. Knock the bad guys dead with your axe. You know, like you do. I'm rambling. Have a good fight. Get back safe. Nothing happened. Not your business, but nothing happened with that thing we were talking about. I'm talking about work things, in case anyone is listening. Nothing work-related happened. I'm still talking." The big axe winked.
"See you back at the office, Ms. Andrea Vernon."
He stepped out to face a big egg. The big old grumpy sarcastic curmudgeon. She looked back to Ms. O, examining a spreadsheet on her table, doing her best to ignore Andrea's word vomit. NYPD officers led the cup team toward the stadium. The remaining police cleared the crowds and began the process of completely evacuating the Bronx. Andrea and Ms. O hopped in a town car that drove them back to the underground cup parking garage. Preparations were over. It was time for the Battle of the Bronx. Andrea and Ms. O also stopped to pick up lunch on the way. It was Greek food, and they both enjoyed their meals. Chapter 21. Slumbok, Admiral of the Sparnaxian Space Fleet.
"Attention, cup employees," Andrea said over the intercom system, broadcasting to the entire building from Ms. O's office. "Ms. O has asked that I read you the following statement. Thank you for all of your efforts, which will pay off today. My daddy, that is Ms. O's father, told me that rodeos weren't won on rodeo day. They were won every day he practiced. And he was the greatest Korean-American rodeo champion of his generation. You are all much like my daddy," again Ms. O's father. "You did the hard work, and now we all just have to ride that bull one final time. There are bottles of Moet champagne on ice for later when we celebrate this company's greatest success and a bright future full of increased profits. There are also cyanide capsules for everyone in the unlikely event that we fail and anyone does not want to live to see the hellish destruction that follows. When you're cooking Christmas dinner, you also gotta cook for some unwanted guests, if you know what I mean, by which I am saying if you know what Ms. O means. Some of you have asked if you will be able to leave and be with your families if the end of the world becomes inevitable. The answer to that is yes, but only once it becomes clear that all hope is lost. Any employee who leaves their station before we declare Code Brontosaurus will not have a job to go back to if, in fact, the planet survives. Also, all hourly employees will still need to clock out even in the event of a Code Brontosaurus. Please do not question this policy. Thank you for your service and your commitment to this company and the survival of this planet. It will be taken into consideration during your annual reviews. Good luck, and see you at the celebration party later today." She walked out into the noise and movement of the office in battle mode. To the uninitiated, it might have appeared chaotic, but Andrea saw the perfectly choreographed ballet. A marketing associate slid on her rolling chair to grab a draft of a press release as a traffic and distribution supervisor spun around her to answer a ringing phone, which an IT specialist ducked under to plug back in the power cord for a computer reported as completely broken. This was business, but in this time of great expectation, it was also art. No other thought she had ever conceived had made her feel like more of a sellout than this one. Was she better at being an administrative assistant than anything else she had ever done? That was depressing. Maybe if she moved to Haiti and worked on the book, she might finally... No, she was not going to do this now. There were murder aliens to thwart. She pressed on.
Inside the war room, she found Ms. O with a stack of reports set on a desk in front of her, and Teresa DeMarco speaking over a Bluetooth headset to multiple subordinates at once. The superhero crews each had a traffic distribution rep in their respective territory, and it did not make sense to fly them out to New York, so they were monitoring the scene back in their home offices and updating their suits accordingly. The monitors were split-screened to show 27 different views of the scene at the stadium, one from each of the New York-based superheroes, 10 views from drones flying above the stadium, and 10 from cameras placed within the stadium. The feeds from the other heroes went to their respective regional offices. Head Start, considered too new to fight, and Teleporter Joe, considered useless, were also back in the office. Watching the scene begin to unfold in the Bronx, Head Start looked anxious and ready to jump in. Teleporter Joe looked sleepy.
"Man, I was up late last night watching cat videos on the internet," Teleporter Joe said. "I wanted to go to sleep, but I really like cat videos. You feel me?"
The door opened and a bright red pincer poked through.
"Krabby!"
Andrea said, much louder than she would have wanted. Krabby shuffled in through the door and gave a big crab hug to Andrea.
"Hey there, young lady. You guys took everything out of my warehouse, so I figured I'd come here and bother you. This place is nice. You got all this space and all these complicated entrances. When I first started, we had two rooms, a front door and a back door for coke and hookers. One time, Bravest Man had to use his super breath to bring this girl Mercedes back to life. Oof, I can only imagine what those headlines would have been. Superheroes, super dead prostitute. Corporation for Ultra-Human Prostitution. We had fun. How you doing, kid?"
"I'm good, Krabby," Andrea lied.
"You're stressed. Old Krabby can see you're stressed. Let me tell you what you do when this is all over and the world is safe for another 20 minutes. You get yourself a nice mani-pedi, get a little exfoliant treatment, do the whole spa thing. Take some Andrea time."
"I will, Krabby."
The door opened again with one more surprise.
"Scott!" yelled Ms. O. "I'm happier to see you than a turkey is to see December."
The salesman walked in very cautiously, still showing signs of having been gored recently.
"Ms. O, happy to be here. I'd hug you, but my insides might fall out."
Ms. O gave her top rep a soft pat on the back. "You ready to watch our team save the world?"
"Yes," Scott answered. "My commission depends on it."
Andrea removed her translator stickers, placing one inside her right ear and the other inside her left cheek. It was immensely distracting. She would definitely play with it all day, but at least she could speak every known language in the universe. On the screen, three massive spider ships came into view headed straight for the Bronx. The size of aircraft carriers, they cruised over Queens, crossing over the Throgs Neck Bridge, and positioned themselves directly in front of Yankee Stadium. The Earth's destiny would soon be written by its greatest heroes. At least, that was what the press release had said. The front spider ship hovered just outside the stadium for several minutes, in no rush to reveal whether they had traveled across the universe to conquer or for spring break. Finally, it descended toward the field and extended one of its gargantuan legs, which landed exactly on home plate.
"Safe!"
called Señora Fuego from up in the stands on the third baseline.
"Safe!"
screamed the big axe from second base.
"I already..."
started Señora Fuego.
"I know, I heard. I was a half second late on the joke."
Lights flashed and whirs sounded from the leg. A previously unseen door opened and two figures emerged. Andrea could not make out much detail until she looked at the view from King Tiger's camera. He took measured steps to greet their visitors, confident but not aggressive. Rabbi Diamond and the big axe cautiously trailed their leader. Both
had bright white skin and wore neon yellow armored suits with red capes. The taller, broader one on the left approximated the Big Axe's size and physique, but taller and either more powerfully built or wearing armor designed to give that impression, like when Andrea tried to wear a dress suit with shoulder pads. That outfit, she decided, had been a failure, but this alien was making it work. His companion, standing to King Tiger's right, stood about 2 feet shorter and lacked the muscular iceberg that sank the Titanic look his friend had working for him. But he made up for that with a turquoise 2-foot-tall Abraham Lincoln-style stovepipe hat. Both of them leaned forward, their long arms significantly disproportionate to the rest of their bodies compared to humans, giving them the look of gorillas. Their heads were perfect spheres, but they retained similar features to humans, 2 eyes, a mouth, and a nose. Their noses were far smaller and thinner than humans. Their eyes were circles, large pools of white with subtle purple dots in the middle. Andrea realized King Tiger had crossed the point of seeing the whites in their eyes. The larger one took a step ahead of his compatriot and pulled a massive horn, similar to a ram's horn, but at least double the size and shimmering silver, from behind his cape. When he blew into it, the overpowering B-flat reached all the way to Cup HQ. Setting down the instrument, he stepped toward King Tiger, addressing him, but directing his speech to all of the assembled superheroes, he said,
"Greetings, new friends. We are from the planet Sparnax. I am Slumbok, Admiral of the Sparnaxian Space Fleet, and this is our diplomatic envoy, Pickles."
Back in Cup HQ, Dr. Srinivasan leaned over to Ms. O and said,
"Everyone else heard Pickles, right? Sometimes the translator has trouble with proper names."
"We have come in peace," said Slumbok. "We have traveled to your mighty planet, seeking to open up trade of goods and ideas. You would be a powerful ally to Sparnax. We respect you, your military, your commerce, and your great artistic achievements. We have brought this gift," he said, pointing to the egg, "as a gesture of goodwill. Please, we wish to speak to King Hrochner."
Back in Cup HQ, Ms. O shook her head. "Like the farmer about to sell a pig until he tells you it's a chicken." King Tiger took a few cautious steps toward the speaker and said,
"We thank you for your kind words, but we do not know of any King Hrochner."
Pickles rolled his eyes and said,
"I told you, this is not planet Juvinta." "This is planet Juvinta. I created a shorter passage through my wormhole, and you are just jealous."
He turned back to King Tiger.
"King Hrochner, the master of this planet. Hrochner, the strong. Hrochner, the delightfully fragranced. I have brought this egg for him."
"This is Earth," King Tiger said. "We do not know of any planet Juvinta."
"Shut up!" Slumbok exclaimed. "You shut your dumb Juventan mouth. This is Juventa. You are a subject of King Hrochner. Bring him us to him, or I will punch you in your stupid Juventan genitals."
"It's not Juventa," said Pickles. "Your wormhole connected us to the wrong solar system, Slumbok."
"Eat your own butt, Pickles," said Slumbok. "This is Juventa. Our space navy worked on that wormhole for 7 cycles, and it worked. We are on Juvinta."
"This is Earth," King Tiger said. "Now tell us what is about to come out of that egg."
"You don't know what planet you live on, you Juvintan idiot," yelled Slumbok.
"You failed," said Pickles. "Your wormhole is a disaster, and now we're on this useless planet, which I am naming Pickles Planet."
"This is Earth," King Tiger reiterated,
but both aliens ignored him.
First, it's Juvanta, Slumbok insisted to Pickles. Second, even if it weren't Juvanta, which it is, you can't just name it after yourself.
I just did, Slumbok. I just named it Pickles Planet. Now look at the readings. Do you see the atmospheric composition?
Pickles held a translucent screen with blinking lights and unfamiliar characters.
So, are we on Juvanta?
Curses to the great stars, Anus! Fine, fine, we're on Pickles Planet,
Slumbok conceded. While neither showed any interest in King Tiger, both directed their eyes at the egg as it began to shake wildly. The hum became a piercing squeal, and giant chunks began to strip off and fall onto the field.
This is neither Juvanta nor Pickles Planet. This is Earth, said King Tiger. Now tell us what is in the egg.
With two emotionless flicks of his wrist, Rabbi Diamond arced Senora Fuego and Kitchen Sink high and straight back to the top bleachers like a beautifully slapped foul ball. Battle positions.
A present for King Hrudshna, said Pickles. For you, likely death.
Then, many bad things happened to many individuals very quickly. The Battle of the Bronx, recounted in something that resembles chronological order. Chapter 22. Senora Fuego and Kitchen Sink. Superheroes.
"Release the obstreperous swarm," declared Pickles,
and instantly the central hubs of each spidership opened, and thousands of bright white human-sized wasp-shaped creatures escaped into the open air. It was hard for Andrea to get a good look at them as they moved so quickly and bunched so closely together. Perched high in the stadium in the cheap seats directly behind home plate, Senora Fuego watched as they rose and then descended back into the stadium.
Any chance this is how these alien dudes surrender? Releasing a bunch of flying monsters?
No, Dr. Srinivasan responded from Cup HQ. They appear to be...
Way to ruin the joke,
she said. The Cup superheroes jumped into action and the sky filled with lightning, laser blasts, and fire, but the swarm kept coming. As one flew past Kitchen Sink, Andrea saw a face like piranha, with bulging red side eyes on its narrow head and sharp teeth protruding from its chin.
"Don't let them get to Westchester or New Jersey!"
Ms. O directed out to all the superheroes. We could lose millions! Mind Mover, in his neon green jumpsuit, appeared to her right and telekinetically slammed two of the wasps, traveling at full speed right into one another. To her left, Crispus Attacks aimed and fired his musket, shooting out a laser net that ripped straight through another few. Floating above, Lady Macbeth grabbed one with her bare hands and whispered into its ear. Seconds later, that wasp sank its teeth into one of its own. Senora Fuego rushed at a group of low flyers, shooting flames out of her hands. The first few columns of the creatures disintegrated before reaching her, but a burning carcass carried enough momentum to ram into her, knocking her down 10 rows. Dazed, she was unprepared for 3 more wasp beasts, their jaws aimed at her neck. A missile hit the middle creature and the explosion destroyed the group. She turned to see Kitchen Sink in position above her.
"Kitchen Sink will fight!" it yelled, followed by, "I hate bugs! I especially hate flying bugs!"
"Got your back," said Senora Fuego.
"I also have your back," echoed Kitchen Sink.
The two took on the obstreperous swarm as it continued to assail the heroes. Texas Tornado spun through, destroying a dozen, until he had to return to human form and was set upon by double that number. Ninja Astronaut flew in to pull him free. Attack ships rose above the stadium and fired heavy machine gun rounds into the fray, which slowed the swarm,
but the numbers became overwhelming. Back in Cup HQ, Dr. Srinivasan and his fellow lab coats stared down at their tablets intently until Ms. O said, "Give me something or tell me y'all are just writing your online diaries." "I don't have an online diary," Dr. Srinivasan replied a little too quickly. "We're analyzing the obstreperous storm. There is some info on them from the Chronicles of the Fall of Our Planet. Rabbi Diamond's mother left extensive notes on the creatures and their physiology. Apparently, she captured a Sparnaxian scientist who..." "Spit out what you got, Doc. I got about as much patience as a raccoon stuck in a whale. And tell all the soups." Dr. Srinivasan leaned into the microphone. "Oh, hello, Cup Superheroes. Hi, this is Dr. Srinivasan." "Are you in a waste everyone's time contest I don't know about?" Ms. O asked. "Sorry," Dr. Srinivasan said, before turning back to the microphone and saying, "The flying creatures, they have powerful jaws and claws. The females will plant their eggs inside of the other creatures they have murdered for sport. The murdering is for sport. The egg-laying is for..." Ms. O put her hand over the mic. "Did you really just tell the world's only hopes for survival that if they die out there, a big insect is going to dump big insect eggs into their bellies and they'll all be dead alien baby bug mamas? In fairness, you are rushing me, and I do not compose myself well when I am rushed." "I'll take that criticism. Please take your time." Dr. Srinivasan returned to the microphone. "Oh, but all of these are males. The Sparnaxians keep them unruly by denying them the ability to mate." "Gosh, Voss," said Senora Fuego, "I can hardly blame them then. Wait, do you have any idea what females smell like?" She then jumped and burned right through an attacking wasp beast. "Well, we have information about a pheromone." "Send it to kitchen sink! Send it to her right now!" Senora Fuego ordered. "I don't see how..." In Senora Fuego's camera view, Rhino Woman fell under a pack of wasp beasts. Werewolf Unicorn impaled two in a row, only to have her legs taken out from under her. "Now!" demanded Senora Fuego. Dr. Srinivasan pointed at one of the lab coats who furiously pounded his tablet and said, "Done."
"Why did someone just send me the formula for the smell of an alien insect's lady parts? Is this spam?"
Kitchen Sink asked.
"I need you to shoot that at me," Senora Fuego said.
"You are going to have thousands of aroused males bearing down on you,"
Kitchen Sink said.
"Sounds like a normal night going out in Manhattan."
Kitchen Sink turned and faced Senora Fuego.
"Do you have a plan once I do this?"
"None."
Thick mucus shot out of Kitchen Sink's arm cannons and coated Senora Fuego. For a moment, nothing else seemed to change. Then all of the wasp creatures froze and turned their heads nearly in unison.
"Need a ride!"
Senora Fuego said, jumping on Kitchen Sink's back. As the entire obstreperous swarm headed for the duo, Kitchen Sink jumped up the last few rows, fired off its rear rocket, and accelerated over the top of the stadium.
"Don't go to Westchester or New Jersey," Ms. O ordered. "How about Riverdale?"
asked Senora Fuego, as Kitchen Sink's wings expanded and they glided to the ground together.
"Do you think the upper crust would mind a few bugs?" "Stay out of Riverdale," said Ms. O. "Too close to Westchester."
Kitchen Sink landed outside the stadium near 161st Street with a metallic scrape, the full obstreperous storm swooping down toward them. Kitchen Sink's lower legs converted to tank treads and it sped forward. Rather than speak, Senora Fuego pulled Kitchen Sink's shoulders, directing it to the left, and the chase was on. The pair sped under the elevated subway station as the swarm went around and through it. At Grand Concourse, the two turned left and headed north. Andrea could sense Ms. O's nervousness with this decision. The view from both of their cams seemed remarkably serene. Facing forward, it felt like an easy car trip with no traffic on a sunny day down a wide roadway. Trees lined the medians on either side of the wide grand concourse. Old brick apartment buildings passed from view, only to be replaced by seemingly identical structures. When Señora Fuego craned back to look behind her, the sky was pure white with the oncoming swarm, their features hard to discern in the sunlight. Trees disintegrated and the cars that had been parked on the street flipped forward and skidded briefly before disappearing into the swarm.
"Hey, guys," said Señora Fuego. "Maybe someone should have said, 'Fuegs, don't get yourself doused in man-eating bug sex juice without a plan.' Aren't there people at COP who are paid to think about these things? I'm just paid to burn things."
"Maybe you should go burn things then," suggested Ms. O.
"If you insist."
Wrapping her legs around Kitchen Sink's head, she lay back and shot flames from her hands at the closest wasps, which disintegrated immediately. But it was like trying to chip away at a mountain with a flaming toothpick.
"Yo, anybody at HQ know if the Jerome Park Reservoir is empty right now?"
Señora Fuego asked. The lab coats again furiously pounded on their tablets until one popped her head up and said,
"Yes! Cupnet says it's been drained since Poisson Control swam in it. Poisson Control was the French fish mutant who..." "Perf! Thanks!"
Señora Fuego pulled hard to the left. Kitchen Sink turned onto Bedford Park Boulevard, and the swarm followed. Moments after she passed underneath another elevated subway stop, the obstreperous swarm slammed through it full force. It slowed part of the swarm for a few moments before the platform collapsed.
"Can you still hear me back at HQ?"
Señora Fuego asked.
"We can," said Ms. O.
"Do me a favor, Ms. O. If I don't make it back, tell my wife I love her."
"I will. I promise I will."
"Also, if I don't make it back, I want everyone to know that Andrea and the Big Axe are doing it!"
"Dude!"
shouted Andrea.
"I'm sorry," said Señora Fuego, "but you made me sit through a database training, and this was the only way I could think to get even."
"Not a good reason, but I'll let it go for now," said Andrea.
"That explains why she let the golden rat..." Dr. Srinivasan started, but Ms. O cut him off with, "New office rule. Only people about to sacrifice their life for the company can talk about office romances." Kitchen Sink blasted through a barrier into a parking lot for Lehman College, ignoring the severe tire damage warning. She approached the Jerome Park Reservoir and its steel gates with the obstreperous swarm closing the gap every moment. A fraction of a second away from ramming through the barrier, she fired her booster rockets and shot into the air.
"Thanks for the lift," said Señora Fuego.
When she was halfway across the reservoir, Señora Fuego let go of Kitchen Sink and fell straight down toward the reservoir, her descent cushioned by the singles bar of giant monstrous alien insects gathered beneath her in preparation for speed dating. In seconds, the entirety of the obstreperous swarm filled the reservoir, all fighting to get closer to the middle and Señora Fuego. Her video feed became pure white and then was lost entirely. Kitchen Sink landed and began to fire pointless rounds of high-caliber ammunition into the swarm, but with no hope of making a dent. Viewed from Kitchen Sink's perspective, Andrea could only guess that at least a few thousand of those creatures now clawed at each other, and not one outside of the reservoir. When Kitchen Sink ran out of ammunition, she reached in for a reload capsule, but instead of swapping it out for the spent one, she fell to the ground in exhaustion and despair.
"Fuegs!"
she called.
"Say something!"
Nothing. And then more nothing. And then one more nothing. And then Señora Fuego's voice came over her audio feed.
"Ladies and gentlemen, the Bronx is burning!"
Before Andrea could see the fire or the smoke, she could see the pile of bugs collapse. The blue flame appeared beneath the sea of white, and soon smoke and gray ash filled the sky.
Andrea could see the surviving members of the swarm still clawing, burning alive as they tried to get closer to Señora Fuego. Andrea heard the horrible shrieks of the dying creatures, and she also thought she heard Señora Fuego scream out in pain. The audio feed cut out as the superhero reached a temperature Dr. Srinivasan's team had not anticipated in constructing her equipment. Everyone tried to get a better view on Kitchen Sink's monitor, but it was all ash and smoke. They could tell it was moving, but not to where. Andrea also realized in this moment she had never figured out the pronoun to use with Kitchen Sink.
It? She? He?
This was not productive thinking. Then she heard,
"Fuegs, this is Kitchen Sink. Where are you?"
Kitchen Sink flung itself into the reservoir, onto the empty, burned husks and dusty remains of the obstreperous swarm. She clawed down, trying to reach the bottom, but heard nothing. The shrieks had died, and nothing moved.
"Fuegs!"
Kitchen Sink boomed from its external speaker. It continued to push aside every bit of remains, and Andrea had no sense how far it was from the bottom.
"Hey!" shouted Señora Fuego. "Can you hurry up? I burned off my clothes, so I'm naked except for the bug guts and dead bodies."
"Hold on. I gotta reload."
"Well, great. Reload and then shoot me a mountain of soap and a Louis Vuitton tracksuit."
"Hey, Kitchen Sink," Andrea said over the comm system. "Do you know why we knew the reservoir was drained?"
"Because CupNet was properly updated."
"This is not the time,"
Kitchen Sink replied.
"Booyah," said Andrea.
From the pit, Señora Fuego called out asking what was being said. Kitchen Sink repeated the conversation, and Señora Fuego shouted back,
"That's balls, Andrea! Real balls!"
Chapter 23, The Big Axe, Superhero.
"A present for King Hrojna," said Pickles. "For you, likely death."
A massive paw poked a hole in the egg about the size of the big axe, dripping sparkling green yolk all over the path between first and second base. The paw retracted, punching forcefully this time.
"I order you by the authority of the Corporation for Ultra-Human Protection to remove that egg, its contents, and your ships from this planet immediately," King Tiger ordered.
"Pickles, what is the nitrogen content of the atmosphere?"
Slumbok asked.
78%, Pickles answered. "The atmosphere of Pickles Planet is 78% nitrogen."
"Good," said Slumbok.
"I love nitrogen."
The egg cracked completely lengthwise, and all of the remaining pieces collapsed to the ground. There, covered in green yolk, stood what appeared to Andrea back in HQ to be a massive, metallic opossum. Its long pink snout opened wide to reveal hundreds of boulder-sized, razor-blade-sharp teeth. It snarled and hissed. Long metallic silver hairs unevenly covered its body, giving the effect of a balding man trying to figure out how to pull off a comb-over.
"Cantankerous abomination! King Hrojna loves this delicacy. It is quite a delicious dish if you are a species that is capable of killing it," said Slumbok. "Curses, what a waste!"
"Perhaps after Cantankerous Abomination destroys all of these residents of Pickles' planet, we might kill it and eat it for dinner," Pickles suggested.
"Yes," said Slumbok. "A bit extravagant, but we deserve something after this nebulous barf of a day. But what if all these creatures are able to defeat Cantankerous Abomination and ruin our meal in the process?"
"If they could defeat it, They could be a threat, too.
Neither of them had eyebrows, but the skin above Pickle's circular eye moved up slightly at the thought.
What is your name, hairy orange thing?
I am King Tiger, defender of Earth, and I am ordering you to leave.
I see, said Pickles, and these are Earth's greatest defenders, all surrounding us here.
Yes, and...
Release the obstreperous swarm! Declared Pickles, and instantly the central hubs of each spider ship opened, and thousands of bright white human-sized wasp-shaped creatures escaped into the open air. Behind King Tiger, Cantankerous Abomination charged at center field and was hit with all manner of lightning, bullets, missiles, and ice, which it did not enjoy, but showing only the same level of discomfort of someone who bit into a cookie expecting chocolate chip and got oatmeal raisin instead.
Slumbok, we can make good use of this planet. We will kill off these defenders, take all of the natural resources, and enslave the rest, Pickles said.
That sounds time-consuming. You know, I have a wormhole to continue to develop.
King Tiger charged at the two with claws out and teeth opened wide, but Slumbok ducked underneath the attack and delivered an elbow to the throat that knocked King Tiger 10 feet back. Big Axe and Rabbi Diamond rushed to follow with their own assaults at Pickles, but Slumbok recovered quickly enough to ram Rabbi Diamond from the side, knocking him into his colleague.
Army of jerks! Pickles yelled back at the spider ship's leg, and outran 15 beings, also with bright white skin and spherical heads.
Their armor seemed less ostentatious than that of Pickles and Slumbok, a drab green that appeared to Andrea to be composed of hard plastic. Back at Cup HQ, Dr. Srinivasan said,
Again, the translator is not perfect. I'm sure there's a little confusion about what...
They're an army and they're jerks, Doc. Translator's doing fine, Ms. O said.
The 15 soldiers marched in 3 lines to take up position between their leaders and the heroes.
Daxcron!
Cried Pickles, and one stepped up from the back row.
Daxcron is my reproductive partner's sibling's offspring. I hired him only to please my reproductive partner, and he is the worst Sparnax has to offer. Daxcron will now murder you, and you will feel shamed as Daxcron does it. Back on Sparnax, they will tell tales about how you were killed by Daxcron, and even the least talented youths will laugh at you. Shame!
Shame! Echoed Slumbok.
Shame!
Said Pickles one more time. Daxcron drew a spear with laser beam tip and charged at the big axe, who decapitated the alien in one swing.
See now, that's why I do not hire family or friends, said Ms. O. Clouds your judgment.
Pickles sighed.
Well... Luckily, the rest of them are competent. Attack!
He and Slumbok retreated back into the spider ship as the remaining 14 members of the Army of Jerks charged at King Tiger, Rabbi Diamond, and the Big Axe. Indeed, they were far more capable, forcing the heroes to dodge their thrusts.
The Big Axe! Rabbi Diamond and I are going to make a run for the ship! King Tiger shouted as he narrowly avoided a stab at his heart.
Sure, I'll just fight the super alien army by myself,
the big axe yelled back, sarcastically but accepting, like when he gave in to Andrea on watching a documentary on John Sobieski, the Polish king.
Sure, I'll just sit here and watch a documentary on a guy who died 10,000 years ago.
He swung his axe in a wide circle, not hitting any of the army of jerks, but causing enough hesitation that Rabbi Diamond and King Tiger could sneak around and into the ship. This left the big axe vulnerable, however, and a spear nearly caught his right knee.
Trans Soul Rebel, dressed in her ripped jeans and leather jacket, came with Raging Boar to assist. But then hundreds more jerks exited the second spider ship, which stretched a leg into the stands near first base. The Supes nearby attacked, but the Big Axe was cut off, separated from his colleagues by an ocean of jerks. The 14 jerks who had started this fight now had additional troops, and they all charged at the Big Axe. Beneath Andrea, she could hear a mighty thud.
"What was that?"
Ms. O asked.
"That's the research lab," Dr. Srinivasan answered. "It's where we keep the animal you asked us to refer to as Radiant Golden Space Puppy."
Andrea heard the puppy cry out pitifully as a spear tripped up the Big Axe and he landed flat on his back. He rose again, still dodging dozens of spears at once, trying to keep them at a distance with his axe, but unable to land any attacks. Another strike cut his face, leaving blood dripping from his right cheek. He was short of breath and in obvious pain, and Andrea could see he had dwindling options. Beneath her, she heard more loud banging sounds, the puppy trying to break right through the walls.
"Let him out," Andrea said. "You can't be serious," said Dr. Srinivasan. "It's an alien creature that we encountered with their fleet. He could go out there and rip our employees apart. You're asking us to take a huge risk."
"I don't ask," said Andrea. "I never ask. Let him out."
"My administrative assistant speaks with my voice," Miss O said. "Now let the damn dog out."
Dr. Srinivasan typed a few strokes into his tablet, and they heard the opening of doors beneath them.
"It's a bit of a maze," he said, "but he should figure it out."
Andrea looked back at the screen to see the Big Axe take a wild swing, leaving himself vulnerable to a counterattack. He could no longer be patient and wait to be worn down, she figured, so he was going on the offensive. Even more jerks had joined the party, and they seemed to worry less and less about the danger Big Axe posed. This worked to his advantage, however, as he cut off a piece of a jerk's foot and quickly rolled to avoid 10 spears to his back. Werewolf Unicorn raced toward the Big Axe on hands and feet, impaling a jerk in the process. Bison cut down another with his saber, but a column of dozens more jerks appeared and blocked their way. They would not be able to fight their way through. The Big Axe was completely isolated.
"I am the Big Axe!" he yelled. "I swing down my mighty arm and chop down evil!"
She could see more cuts on his arms as he looked down for a moment in exhaustion. The others around her in the war room seemed preoccupied with Senora Fuego and the obstreperous swarm, and she felt completely alone.
"Give me something or tell me y'all are just writing your online diaries," Ms. O said.
"I don't have an online diary," Dr. Srinivasan replied a little too quickly.
"We're analyzing obstreperous storm. There is some info on them from the Chronicles of the Fall of Our Planet. Rabbi Diamond's mother left extensive notes on the creatures and their physiology."
Andrea refocused on the Big Axe in time to see him tripped again, barely able to dodge another round of attacks. Behind him, Cantankerous Abomination continued to terrorize the superheroes in the outfield, but the Big Axe seemed oblivious.
"I am the Big Axe!"
he yelled again, collapsing to a knee. One of the jerks called the others back, leaving only the two of them to face off.
"I am the one who will kill you," the jerk said,
and he pulled out a flaming sword out of the back of his armor.
"I am the head jerk, and I possess one of the flaming Sparnaxian swords of treachery. It was a reward for my performance in last year's Jerk Fest. My family was very proud."
He rushed at the Big Axe, who seemed ready for the charge, until a jerk snuck up behind him and sliced at his leg. He tumbled backward, landing with the axe still held above his face. The jerk's sword slammed down on the axe and did the unthinkable. It broke the Big Axe's axe in half. The sword would have then cut through the Big Axe's skull if it had been in the same place it had been a millisecond earlier. But it was not. Lying there on the ground was someone who looked very little like the big axe. It was a man with the same big hair and a red beard, but measuring 3 feet shorter. If he were standing and Andrea were there, she would have been taller than he was. But he was not standing, and she was not there. Skinny and lacking any kind of muscle.